Blog Talk Radio.
It's Sunday, and this is Pause IM Radio. We're excited to be on the air and hosted by Blog Talk Radio. Your hosts for today's program are Robert Brining and Jeremy Dunn. We'll be taking your calls and speaking with our featured member of the week. We encourage all of our listeners to phone in and share some of your life experiences. The number to call is 347-215-9442. Welcome to Pause IM Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Pause IM Radio. I am your host, Robert Brining. I'm joined by Jeremy Dunn. How are you doing today, Jeremy?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
Good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Since last year.
I know. Can you believe our show's been on for 2 years?
Yeah, right? It's funny, I did the count today, and today is show number 20, which is kind of exciting.
20 shows. Gosh.
I can't believe it.
I know. It's like a whole season of like 24 or something.
That's funny.
Fabulous.
Well, today we're going to actually have a great show. We're going to have our member of the month on the Pause IM community. Joshua's going to call in from Orlando, and we're going to talk to him a little bit about, you know, his life and what's going on with him and how he's making out with his diagnosis and stuff like that. And then we'll open the floor up for callers to call in. I know you want to start with something important in the news, so we'll go ahead and start with that first.
Ooh, really? We're
yeah.
only 1 minute into the show, and you want me to start?
Yeah, go ahead, start. You said it's huge.
Okay, it is big. It's actually probably one of the largest stories that has hit in a while. And if I can get, well, I'll just come out right out with it. Christine Maggiore, the famed AIDS denialist, is dead at 52. She had HIV. She was diagnosed in 1992. She had two children. She also had one daughter who passed away a couple of years ago from AIDS, HIV-related pneumonia, and it appears that Christine also died from HIV-related pneumonia. But of course, all the evidence is pointing to that. Probably the biggest, you know, one of the bigger things to come out of all of this is her organization. She wrote this book. What was it? Everything You Want. What was the book called? Anyway, I'll find out what the book was called here in a second. But she didn't get her. Her daughter or her son tested when they were when they were born, and she also breastfed both children. And again, her daughter, who was only two at the time, died from HIV related pneumonia. She and her and I'm repeating myself. her organization is stating that though she died, it can't be proven that she died from HIV or AIDS. And they said her supporters expressed shock Monday over her death, but were highly skeptical that it was caused by AIDS. And the organization would not stop from questioning mainstream thinking. Why did she remain basically healthy from 1992 until just before her death? Asked David Crow, who served as Maggiore for a number of years on the board of the nonprofit Rethinking AIDS. It was certain that people who promote the establishment view of AIDS will declare that she died of AIDS and will attempt to use this to bring people back in line. But you can only learn so much from an unfortunate death. Brian Carter, who facilitated local peer groups in Maggiore, said that the movement would remain strong. Christine was only a part of this, he says, and there's an outstanding number of prominent rethinkers, independent thinkers, doctors, scientists, lawyers who question AIDS causation. And
did they do an autopsy on her?
The family's refusing to do an autopsy.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And she just went into under the care of a doctor. Imagine that. You know, imagine that. The county of Los Angeles, when her daughter died, Eliza Jane Scoville, when she died, the county of Los Angeles was actually looking at prosecuting Maggie Ory on criminal charges because she never did get her daughter tested, and she insisted on breastfeeding her, and she insisted on not taking any kind of medication to prevent the transmission of the virus from mother to child. And, of course, after her daughter's death, the HIV-AIDS nihilists, aided and abetted by a so-called toxicologist, he's actually a veterinarian toxicologist, read the autopsy report and tried to blame the daughter's death on a reaction to antibiotics and childhood viral illnesses. Of course, it had no reasonable basis or scientific basis in any kind of medicine at all. It's just sad, really, that what's sad is that she decided not to get her child or children, both children, tested, and she insisted on breastfeeding her child, and inevitably resulted in the death of her child. And she also, you know, at 52. She was positive since 1992. So what is that? No. That's 92 plus whatever it is. How many years is that?
What did you say? 92 to now?
Yeah, 92 to now 16? Is what? 10 plus 7 is 17 years.
17.
And so. It's a frightening thought that there are so many out there who deny that HIV causes AIDS, and it's a frightening, it's frightening because it's causing the death of so many.
Right.
16. Thank you. 16 years. I've been corrected.
<16
years.
laughs>
I was off by a year. 16 years.
I thought so.
It's sad, and what people are in to fall into the guise of this pseudoscience that they are promoting is it's scary for people who are just diagnosed. It's scary for people who don't have all the answers, and then they stumble upon this stuff, and it's giving them ill-gotten advice, and it's scary.
Yeah, and I know this is a huge, huge topic that could be a whole nother show. It's that big because I know it's something that has been going on for a while. Because I mean, I'm familiar with this lady, and I've only been positive and really active in the last 3 years. So I've only really been looking for stuff online for 3 years, and I know I've come across this stuff And I question things like that, and I'm just a free thinker, and I always think outside the box, and I'm not, you know, saying this is, you know, that what she says is correct, and I'm not saying anything like that. I'm the type of person where I have an open mind to everything, and I always look at everything 100%. So with anything, always do your homework. Always, you know, consult your doctor. You know what I mean? We're not doctors on here. Me and Jeremy, we're just trying to share some experience, you know.
However, Robert, I'm going to lay it out on the line. She had no scientific basis in any of her findings. She had no real science to back her up. She went out of the care of doctors. And that is bad. Sorry, you can have an open mind. I think all of us should go into this open mind, with an open mind. All of us should ask questions, but the minute you turn your back on supported science, on on peer review, on fact that medicines do work and are keeping people alive a lot longer. If she had been on medicine, her daughter would probably be alive. She would probably still be alive today. But having an open mind is very, very different than going in and shutting everything else out. But what she was promoting is absolutely harmful. So anyway, that's the big story. We'll talk. I think we should definitely do a show on AIDS denialism.
Yeah, we should, because I'm kind of like one of those people who kind of like float in the middle. And like, I'm not saying that I believe, you know, everything that she says. I just kind of float in the middle with always thinking outside the box, like I said. And I think I would like to have somebody who, I know what you think about it, but I know there's a lot of people who think the other side and have views on that. And I think it would be a healthy conversation if it was just a conversation.
I'll tell you, Robert, it's not a healthy conversation. Because they misuse findings, they misquote scientists, and they get people into trouble. And it's very, very sad, and it's very, very dangerous, because they have caused the death of many, many people by convincing them not to seek treatment. So I can pull up all of the evidence to support that, because they don't have evidence to support their findings. They just don't. I think it's a good topic to talk about, to make people aware of the dangers of denialism. But I wouldn't give the time of day to an AIDS denialist.
No, I'm not saying I would actually go out and grab somebody who
a denialist. I would not be sucked into some kind of pseudoscientific debate with them, because it would be like bringing, you know, some religious nut on the show and trying to get them to make me believe in God. You know,
right.
So, you know, because, one, they have the same viewpoints, they have the same philosophies, and they just use scare tactics into getting people not to go on the meds. And what she did was unthinkable to her children, absolutely unthinkable. And while I am sorry that she has died, and but what did she do to prevent the transmission? She did nothing. So it makes me a little angry. She did nothing.
Well, everybody takes a different path, you know. That's just the way
that it
is. And she thought she was doing something. I mean, this is what she thought. I'm not thinking this. She obviously thought she was doing something correct. It's what she thought in her mindset. So, I think people who follow her have a choice. And if you have a choice to do what you want, and I'm not saying to choose that. I'm just saying that these people that follow her and passed away also made the choice.
But
you can't blame one person for everybody.
No, but we all can choose whether or not to go into treatment, right?
Right. Absolutely.
But what she has done is she's taken it a step further with her organization. And her organization is quite frightening, to be honest with you. It is an absolutely frightening thing what they've done. And what they continue to do is they don't think that HIV causes AIDS, and they think that treatment doesn't work. And it's a scary, scary thing. It is just a frightening thing. But that is a huge And I think, let's see, their group is called Alive and Well AIDS Alternatives. You know, it's, you know, they're just, they haven't gotten anything based in real science. And that's what it boils down to. You can go into it, like I said, you can go into it with an open mind, go into it and question what's going on. But you also have to look at the evidence. That's what science is based on. It's about peer review. It's about the it's about being able to recreate the same results. It's about hypothesis. It's about fact. That's what science is about. And so anyway, there you go. Like I said, we can have a whole show wrapped
right.
up.
So anyway, what we're saying is always consult your doctor. That's what me and Jeremy are trying to say. Always go to your doctor and make sure that, you know, you're doing what is needed for you to stay healthy. That's the most important thing. Some things that are happening actually on the PosIM community. First, I want to wish everyone a happy new year. You know, welcome to 2009. It's obviously going to be a wonderful year of change. And if change approaches you in 2009 and maybe it's a new HIV diagnosis and you're not able to change this thing that's going on that you don't like, view the way that you change. You know, view it as, what can I learn from this? And what am I supposed to do to grow, you know, health-wise, or to grow as an individual? Don't be afraid of change. Change is definitely going to be all around this year, and it's been absolutely crazy. The one thing that I wanted to mention is that we are very close to 300 members on the PosIM community, which I'm really excited about. We had 14 new members come this week. And last week I didn't get to announce the member of the month for January, so I wanted to announced that it is Joshua from Orlando, who should be calling in sometime soon. He's actually late. Josh, the number is 347-215-9442. No, I told him to call in a quarter after, but that's cool. We're going to speak with him. He actually did. I'm really excited, if you remember from the old site, Jeremy, the Meet the Member interview, and I did that once a month, so I just brought that back and had Josh do one of them for me, and I'm going to actually do them twice a month, a Meet the Member interview to kind of get members out there talking and sharing some of their experiences. You did that for me before, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, on the old site, I think.
He didn't call them because he was letting me speak.
Oh, trust me, we'll have another show. You can hear him speak.
Yeah, exactly. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba. And I won't be coughing in everybody's ear, apparently.
Are you sick too? Whatever.
No,
last week I was really sick.
But I understand that you tried to infect everybody over the airwaves, giving everybody a cold.
Yeah, I was sick. I was so glad that everybody called in to keep me talking because I woke up the day after Christmas and I just had this like mucus attack. And
that's,
you know, my partner Joe was sick on Christmas, and I guess I got it the day after, and I'm still fighting the mucus. It's ridiculous. Yeah, I don't like it too much. Also, if you noticed, I did do some graphic changes on the PosIM community. I noticed that I use the Internet Explorer browser, and if you actually use Mozilla Firefox, that is what the community is viewed best in, where you can see the graphics are a little distorted in Internet Explorer. So if you download the Firefox browser, you'll be able to actually view everything a lot better.
And yeah, I use Firefox.
Yeah. It looks like
I was using Safari, but apparently it didn't like me today.
Well, we got our member of the month, Josh, on. How you doing, Josh?
Hey, guys. How are you?
How you making
Happy
out
New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
Yes,
yeah. So,
how are things
tell
going?
Me, Josh, what was your New Year's resolution this year?
Well, last week I was debating on what it was. I usually, you know, just take somebody else's idea. But one thing is definitely I have like an image of what I want to be. It's like a half year point goal because my birthday is in July. So I want to like be a certain kind of fit by my birthday. And so that's kind of like a half year resolution. And then this year, definitely I want to just be more active in the community. And like a generalization, like just take on a cause. And, you know, obviously my cause would be HIV. And hopefully, you know, I could expand on that as well.
Active. That's
so
nice.
Yeah.
That's very nice. My resolution, because I didn't call in last week, my resolution is this. I'm not going to drink anymore, but I'm not going to drink any less either.
That's always a good resolution.
I'm telling you. Hear, hear.
Well, hopefully you drank a lot last year, so you'd have, you know, a good
window
of drinking.
Oh, God, 2 weeks. Oh, Lord. Anyway, I digress. So, Josh, tell us, how did you find Paz IM?
It was kind of by accident. I was on another website, and
there are no accidents.
No. Well, I blame it on fate, but I was just, you know, on a website, and they were talking about some sort of an HIV like camp or something like that, and then they had listed some other websites, and I don't remember the one website that they had listed, but somebody had mentioned Robert's site, and then I just checked it out, and I'm like, you know what, this is exactly what I've been looking for. So the rest is history.
Well, that's always a good thing, right?
Yeah, definitely.
I wonder, was it Camp Kindle?
I think it was that.
Yeah, they're the ones that we sent Beanie Babies to 2 years ago.
You sent Beanie Babies to somebody?
There's Camp Kindle is a camp for kids with HIV and AIDS. And and there was one in Nebraska and there's one in California. And I collected 500 Beanie Babies and sent like 300 to one camp and 200 to the other camp.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, it was really cool.
That's very sweet of you.
Yeah,
I want a Beanie Baby.
I got all the pictures. I got pictures of the kids holding the Beanie Babies, holding up signs that say thank you. Yeah, it was really cool.
Aw, Rob, who knew you had a heart?
this year we collected, I actually collected gift cards and stuff like that. And me and my partner did a fundraiser with one of his events for the camps, and we raised over $1,000 for both camps. That's cool.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, it was really, really cool.
Wow.
You know, it feels good to give back.
It does. And I'm not going to take away from Joshua's time, but I do want to mention that I'm going to be doing a heck of a lot of fundraising this year because I'm sitting on the board of one of our local ASOs here in Charlotte. I'm on the board for the regional HIV-AIDS consortium here in Charlotte, and I'm also chairing their fundraising committee, and so I might just be doing some fundraising on the show. You never know. We might have a little telethon.
Sounds fun. Sounds like
it
would be
cool?
A good time.
Yeah.
But definitely.
Yeah. Do a little telethon, you know, call in, you know, member-supported type thing like NPR. Anyway, back to Josh.
So, Josh, when were you diagnosed HIV positive?
Exact date was May 9th of 07.
Okay, so you're close to 2 years.
Your 2 years coming up.
Yeah. Do I get a chip or something?
You get a coin. Right?
You'll get a notice of accommodation.
Yeah, so
wow,
it's,
2 years.
It's been crazy 2 years.
Okay. I also read that you were in a study. What study are you on?
I'm not sure how many people are in the study, but it's basically how to, like, just how to approach on taking medicines, whether it's a very, like, they have half of the people just starting off fully aggressive, and then halfway through the study, they drop one of the three medications and then see if they sustain the same results, and then the other half just stay on the three meds the whole time. And it's a 2-year study, and I'm almost at the end of it now. And I was part of the group that dropped one of them, and it's worked out fine for me. So I was very thankful, because, like, when they told me that I was dropping one of them, I was kind of nervous. I'm like, oh, great. All my numbers are going to jump around. But that was great. So
cool.
One less thing to take.
Okay.
But
I mean, so then you are on medication, obviously, right?
Yes.
You're doing the study. Okay. I know that's one of the questions I wanted to ask. So.
Yes.
Now, how have you experienced side effects with that? Because I know a lot of people who are out there questioning starting medicine and stuff like that, they're afraid of side effects.
Yeah. I was very fortunate that the only thing I had was, like, I was just extremely nauseated. Like, I never take any sort of medicine. Like, I just feel weird about it. So when I started taking it, like, I could just feel it working, type of thing. And I got really, like, nauseated. And that was, like, the only thing that really affected me.
How long did you have that?
It was probably, like, a week to 2 weeks until I got used to it. But it was, I had to find the balance of what time of the day I would take it, and then
mm-hmm.
I kind of did some research on the medication, and then there's certain things that you have to take, like, while you're eating food or exactly right after you're done eating, and
mm-hmm.
sometimes I would, like, take it, like, an hour after I eat or a little bit before I eat, and ever since, like, I just kind of, like, take it with my food, I've been fine.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I think as with any medication, it's always, you know, there's always the recommended dosing that they have on the bottle and what the doctor tells you, but you have to figure out what works best for you, right?
Yeah. And
yeah, so.
So mine's, like, basically, like, late morning, early afternoon, like, when I'm having, like,
mm-hmm.
a lunch. That,
okay.
to me, has been working a lot better.
Do you take them once a day, or do you take
yep.
them?
It's once a day.
Nice.
I just take two pills.
That's nice.
Right.
I speaking of meds, I was on a study when I was first diagnosed, and I was on Pfizer's brand name is called Selzentry. It's the Maraviroc. Which is an entry inhibitor for if you have a CCR5 tropism, and we won't have to go into all of that. but I was on that for about a year and a half, and then they had to switch me to a different medication, and now I'm on my third med, which is a triple, which is the one pill a day, which is the three medications in the one pill. So I know what it's like to take one pill a day and love it. One a day, and you're done. Oh, God, I was taking it there, and, you know.
It was kind of ironic, because right before I started the study, before I was diagnosed, my ex and I, we were like, you know what, let's become, like, more healthy. Let's start taking vitamins and all this stuff. And I remember I went to Target, and they had, like, this little book on the aisle. It says, you know, men from 18 to 35 should be taking these vitamins and stuff like that. And then we just went out and, like, cleared the shelves and got all this stuff. And we're, like, taking seven, you know, vitamins a day and all this stuff. And then it's just, like, literally probably, like, a week or two later, I'm just like, oh, great. Now we have to take three more, you know.
Right.
But at least I already got used to it.
Now, do you take your vitamins when? In the morning, afternoon, at night?
I take my vitamins in the morning.
Okay.
Kind of like part of my breakfast.
Yeah. Well, something that I actually learned from my partner is that the best time to take your vitamins is actually right before you go to bed.
Oh.
Because you get most out of your vitamins at night, where when you're, if you take them in the morning and you're eating and you're doing all the things, all the nutrients are not being absorbed. But when you're sleeping and not eating all these other, you know, bad foods, cheeseburgers and stuff like that, you know, at night, your body can consume all of your vitamins. So it's always good to take your vitamins at night. And I take that big handful of vitamins at night too.
Yeah. It took me like a couple of months to feel like that. I stopped feeling like a pill popper. You know, it's just like, man, I'm taking, I literally like have a handful, and I'm really bad at swallowing pills. I think that was another reason why I didn't like taking pills ever. I would always like have my mom like crush them or something like that when I was a kid. But
okay, Joshua, hold on 1 second, because I used to have my mother crush them and put them in jelly for me.
Oh, see? So I'm not the only one.
I am so, with you on this.
And it took me forever. Like then like I would try to like wrap it in bread and eat the bread, and it, like I could eat the whole bread except for the pill. It was like amazing. Like how my body just rejected the pill alone. And I don't know, just one day it just started, like, I just was able to start swallowing them. And then before, when I started taking the medicines or the vitamins, I would take one at a time. And my ex would look at me, and he's just like, come on, like, smallest, probably two at a time. Because, like, I would just sit there. It would take me, like, a couple of minutes because then, you know, I would pop a vitamin and, like, chug a glass of water. And
yeah.
So now I could grab a whole handful and swallow them all at once.
I think it's all it's all mental.
Something mental?
Exactly. Volume mental. No, because I was the same way. It took me till I was probably 18 or 19 that I could actually swallow an aspirin.
Yeah. And those are small.
I mean, exactly.
That's funny to me.
I choke on it. It is funny because I couldn't swallow an aspirin. And finally, I just closed my eyes, stuck it into my mouth, and swallowed it with water. And then I realized, you know what? I'm going to swallow it, and I'm not going to die. I'm not going to choke to death. I can't believe it. So now I can take, like, handfuls of these things.
That's funny. I can take my vitamins without even taking it with water. I can just swallow them normally.
Oh, no.
That's kind of odd, huh?
No,
I can only do with that with Limodal.
I can't. Even now, like, I feel like it all stays in my throat, and I can feel it. And then that's the worst feeling for me, is that, like, it feels like it's slowly going down, and I'm like, and that makes me even more nauseous.
Right, yeah.
So I, like, I take them, and, like, I have, like, my really tall glass, and I just fill that up with water, and I just, like, chug it until the whole glass is gone. So
funny. You know, one of the questions I had for you, Josh, is I know everybody views their HIV status differently. I know Jeremy, if I get this right, Jeremy, you view yours as you're the landlord and he's the tenant, right?
Well, that's one way of describing it, yeah.
That's one way that you view your thing. And I know there's a guy who has a book who, you know, refers to it as his pet virus. I kind of look at it as sort of as a gift, as something that kind of gave an awakening to myself. I wonder, how do you view yours?
That's a good question. I don't think I've ever really put much thought into it. It's I could kind of see it as a sort of gift. I kind of agree with you because it's opened my eyes to so much more, and like, you know, of taking a negative to a positive, no pun intended. And it's just, I know before, I was just really uneducated about it all. And, like, just me being, you know, HIV positive, it makes me more aware of everybody else, of, like, other diseases out there and what other people are struggling with as well, as opposed to before, I was just kind of, like, in my own little world. And, like, I kind of looked back and I felt like I was selfish, you know, and I'm kind of like turning things around and I want to be like more helpful and give back. So it's kind of like one of those blessing in disguise, I guess.
I hear that.
And, you know,
oh,
like...
beat me to it.
The what?
I was getting... I'm, like, sitting there trying to type in kind of questions and beat me to it. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. So if you guys out there have a question for Josh, please call in 347-215-9442. Or if you don't want to call in, just type in your question in the chat room and we'll be more than happy to transfer it on the air. Let's see. Do you have a question here, Jeremy, for him, or do you want me to move on? Or?
No, we can move on.
You can move on to the next question.
Yes, please move on. No, I just wanted to say that I look at, you know, and like Rob said, you know, I look, HIV for me is, I describe it as me being a landlord and it being a tenant in my little apartment building that I call my body. And, you know, it's a matter of, for me, HIV has given, I wouldn't necessarily call it a gift, unless it was like one of those Christmas presents that you get and you go, oh, wow, you shouldn't have. You really, really shouldn't have. But
I can't return this one.
Exactly. I can't return this. The store's gone out of business. But it's given me a kind of a, I wouldn't say a new lease on life, but it's given me a way to look at life from a very different perspective. Because I was taking advantage of so many things before I was diagnosed. And I think that being diagnosed and I also got very, very sick. And I have this way of looking at every day as when I put my feet on the carpet, I know it's a good day in the morning. So when I wake up, put my feet on the floor, you just have to make the day work. And do you feel that, and I think you might have said this, but do you feel that your activism has increased because of this diagnosis, or do you think that, you know, you're taking a different stab at life?
I would say, like, both, you know. It's, like, it's opened my eyes to, like, the whole world, kind of, like, how I view every single person and that specific individual person, like, what they're going through in their life and, you know, what, and, like, I feel like, what can I do to help? And it's funny because I was talking to a friend of mine the other day, and I'm studying to be an architect and stuff like that. And then, you know, the past, you know, few months, I'm like, you know what, I'm going to probably end up being, like, an activist or something, because I've always had this passion of going out and helping people. And, I wanted to become an architect to, you know, work with Habitat for Humanity. And, you know, like, I want everyone to have a roof over their head. Like, that's my goal. And, like, it's just, like, you know, maybe this has set me on a new path, and I see people and their struggles, and I want to go out there and do what I can to help, and especially help myself and help people in my situation as well.
I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. And if there's anything that me and Jeremy can do for you, Josh, to get you started with anything, let us know. We'll be more than happy to help you.
Pazayan definitely has jump-started that. And, like, seeing what you've done with your dream and being as successful as it is, you know, it's a motivation, you know, and it's inspired me to definitely do what I want to do as well.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Very interesting, because it kind of, like, you know, I can understand, Josh, it kind of, like, put a spark inside of you to do something. You know what I mean? After the diagnosis, you kind of first when I was going through the denial, but now after accepting it and everything, it's kind of like I cherish every little moment. Like every moment I see my mother, I cherish, and those friends, like every little thing matters to me now, where before it was always about me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Where now I constantly think about other people and what I can do to help other people. And it definitely made me not judge anyone anymore. Where before I was one of those people who was in the corner talking smack about people, you know, I mean, at the bar or something like that. Where now, I was one of those.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm kind of one of those people who open up to everybody and try to talk to everybody. I think one of the most and things that enlightened me about you, Josh, is your sense of humor. When I'm online and I'm chatting with you, and when other people are chatting with you, they've commented to me that they get lost in your sense of humor, and they don't think about their HIV status. They get lost, and they're in this, you know, own world with Josh, where he's, you know, making them laugh or cracking a joke. And I think it's a wonderful thing. Sense of humor. It's a
breath
of fresh air.
I don't think it's his sense of humor, Robert.
Yeah, what do you think it is?
I really don't. I think it's because he's damn cute.
Oh, no.
I think that's what it is. They all get lost and go, oh, look at him, he's so cute.
No.
Believe me, that catches up with you, all right?
That's funny.
You, Josh. I did. I did look like you. And now let me tell you, I look like what's-her-name from The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, Linda?
The Wicked Witch.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm green, my nose is big, I have a big wart on my chin, it's all downhill. How close are you to 18 versus 35?
Well, I'm 25, so.
Uh-huh. Yeah, wait till you hit 30, it's all downhill.
Yeah.
Well, shut up, I'm not there yet either.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
well, Robert's going to get there first.
Yes, I'll be 30
Robert
in
will
May.
Get there first.
And then we'll point a laugh at him.
That's right. You know,
5 years from now,
he will
point a laugh at me.
As long as I get through and don't have a midlife crisis, I'll be very happy.
Oh, plenty of friends.
What I wanted to say, Joshua, is that don't give up on the architect thing. Don't. And I want to send this message out to everybody who's listening. Is that just because you've been diagnosed with HIV should not deter you from finishing out your goals, from achieving your goals. It's just a thing that you're going to have to take care of now, you know, and you can still move forward with what you want to do. And I think it's great that you want to take that and then throw your efforts and energy into putting roofs over people's heads. I think that is fantastic because the organization that I work with, one of our main focuses is actually housing for HIV-positive people, lower income, and those who don't have any income. And one of our main points is that housing is a method of prevention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if we can get somebody into a home and put a roof over their head and give them something stable, they're less likely to go out and engage in high-risk behaviors that they've been engaging when they've been out on the street. So, and we've been noticing that. We've been seeing, we can prove that.
That's great.
And I think it's just wonderful that you would want to do that. Because I think regardless of HIV status, everyone deserves a home. Everyone deserves a warm bed and a warm place to come home to every day. And call their own, and whether that be a house or an apartment or something, everyone deserves that. So I commend you for wanting to do that.
Thank you. Yeah, it's something I've always had a passion about as a kid. Like my family, they always knew that I was going to be a builder or a designer of some sort, because I would like. My parents would come home from work or something, and if I've been at home for more than 30 minutes alone, I've built a castle out of all the furniture, you know, in the house. And they come in and they're like, how in the heck did you build that, you know?
Yeah, I would kill you.
I used to do that too with the chairs and the blankets.
Yep. So.
Yeah, but it's very important for all the listeners, you know, Josh, don't ever give up on your dreams. One, a friend of mine sent me a quote, and I actually use it on the site, our dreams are not infected. And it's very important that people understand that. Just because you're HIV positive, your life doesn't end. You know, your dreams don't disappear. You should still
It drives my goals even harder. Like, it makes me want to push even harder because of it,
right.
You know. It's fueling that fire. So it's been very beneficial for me because I've been kind of like putting some stuff off, and I'm just like, you know what, you know, I have this is all the life I have right now, and I want to like make the most of every day that I can, you know. So whether it's not more scholarships or grants or putting myself out there, making a new friend, just anything, any aspect of my life. Like, I just try my hardest each day to make it the best. So it's actually, it's made it a lot better.
That warms my heart. And I'm not being funny, but it does. It warms my heart.
It's always good to hear that people want to do good things, you know?
It does. Oh, look who showed up in the chat room.
Always late. He'll be here for 10 minutes, and then he'll pop out.
Better late than never. We've only got 10 minutes left of the show.
Josh, does your parents know about your status and, like, your family and friends around you?
They do not. No one, none of my close friends or family know. That's one thing that I've been battling inside with. Scary enough, I've never had a really great relationship with my mother. I've been really close to my dad, which is kind of reverse for most gay men. But when I told my mom that I was gay, the first thing that she said was, well, you're just going to die of AIDS.
Oh, God.
And that really stuck in my head. You know, that was kind of disturbing.
Yeah.
And, you know, as great as a mother has been, like, she's never like said anything that extreme, you know. And because I would push her button and I would expect, you know, I would get the reaction that I want from her, but like that was like really big. And her brother died of HIV before I was even born.
So your uncle.
And, right. And she views me as like him. Like, she sees a lot of him in me. And then it kind of, like, strikes me really hard because, you know, I don't want it to be traumatizing for her because I know it would be. You know, she's like, she views me as her brother, and then the same thing has happened in her life. So, I mean, I unfortunately never got to meet him. I've heard stories from my sisters, like, how great he was, and he was like he was always making jokes and pulling pranks and stuff like that, and, like, basically, like, I got his personality, basically, and, you know, I've been struggling on whether or not I should even tell, you know, her or my immediate family because of what has happened, you know, what has already happened in her life. So I there's some days I wake up and I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to call him up and tell him, like, what, I don't care. And then some days I'm like, you know, should I be sensitive and not even kind of bother them with that? I don't know. I'm still thinking about it. And my friends, I know I could tell them and they won't care. I'm on the fence. So.
Right.
Well, from my side of it, Josh, is it took me 2 years to tell my parents. So, you know, it's a hard thing to sit your parents down and tell them. So, you know, it's tough.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I think I waited 2 days after my diagnosis and told my mom. It was immediately like 6 months after my father passed away, and I had to sit her down. And I remember sitting her down previously before that because I was addicted to meth and cocaine and things like that. And I sat down with her to tell her, you know, that I had a drug problem and I wanted to get help. And she thought I was going to sit down and tell her that I had AIDS. And then little did I know that 6 months later is when I actually sat there and told her. And I'll tell you what, my mom was one of those people who, oh, well, when I told her I was gay, I didn't find the right woman. You know what I mean? And, like, she always had an excuse for why I was the way I was. And once it happened to her son and her son became HIV positive, and now that I'm doing something good about it, my mom's all gung-ho and on for the ride. You know what I mean? She's even a member of the site, which is a great. So, I mean, once you tell your parents, and for me, it opened up a whole different kind of communication and actually brought me and my mom closer together. That's always an outcome that could happen as well, Josh.
Yeah. Like, my relationship with my mother has gotten a lot better. She actually went to Puerto Rico for 3 years to take care of her mom, my grandmother, because she was very sick. So all the sisters kind of, like, went back there and kind of, like, took care of her and stuff like that. And she was gone during the whole, like, relationship that I was with my ex. And she always heard about him and stuff like that. And she was like, oh, you know, I want to meet him and all this stuff. And then when she finally came back, everything was already over and done with. And we would, like, it was, like, the first time that she actually sat down and talked to me about, like, she, like, apologized for being so hard on me. Because while she was over there, one of her close friends, her son came out, and she was, like, bad-mouthing him and saying all this horrible stuff. And then when she saw somebody else speaking badly of their own child, she was, like, she stopped and thought about it. And she's like, wow, that's what I said to my son, and that's horrible. You know, and she finally came back to me and was like, you know, hey, you know, I'm sorry I was so rough. It was just, like, you know, and then she had mentioned her brother and all that stuff. She's like, you know, it's just a very touchy subject, and, you know, she apologized. And we're a lot closer now than before. And so, I mean, with my family, it's a lot easier to just ease into something instead of sitting them down and making a big production.
Right.
Like, the only person I really told out, like, flat out, I'm gay was to my mom. And that was actually in the heat of a, like, argument. And but everyone else, like, I just, like, introduced them, you know, to whoever I was dating, but it's just a very casual way. And they just, like, kind of stuck around to all the little family events, and everyone got the hint, and everyone's cool with that. Like, that's just how our family works. Like, we never just sit down and have, like, a serious topic, you know, discussion.
Right.
But as long as it's just, like, kind of carefree, like, if I don't make a big deal, they're not going to make a big deal. So, like, you know, I just make them comfortable and show them how comfortable I am with it, and it's great. So
I think once you get a little bit more comfortable with it,
definitely, yeah,
you know, you'll definitely turn it over and open up more to other people. I mean, it's the way that it goes. It's the way of life. Once you're diagnosed, that you go through all different stages, and you're just, you know, going through the stages. So, you know, I wish you luck, and I hope everything works out for you.
Yeah, I have no doubt. It'll happen when it's supposed to, I guess.
There you go. Jeremy, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm Saul. Yeah, I'm typing away in the chat room. You know, you guys can chat. I'd like to say that if anybody has a question or a comment for Josh, we have about 6 minutes remaining. Please call in at 347-215-9442, or you can do a one click if you have Skype and just click on the Skype button if you're logged in and talk to Josh.
I'm here.
There you go.
Josh, here. So, what do you plan on doing for the rest of the year, Joshua? What's your plan?
That I have to actually sit down and figure out my exact plan. But I almost, like, want to go around waving a flag and just, like, get in everyone's face and, you know, just kind of, like, wake people up. Like, I feel like everyone around, especially in Orlando, they're just. I see everyone with, like, a glaze over their eye. I mean, maybe they're on drugs, but it really upsets me, because this past week I've gone out 4 nights in 1 week. I never do that. And just kind of seeing these groups of people out and about, and I kind of, like, glance over at people and just kind of give you that nod. But, like, everyone just seems, like, in the same, like, rut. And I'll talk to people, like, outside, you know, that scene, and it just seems like it's the same thing. And I've lived here my whole life, and I would go out now like once every 1 or 2 months, and it's the same people, same place, you know, same night.
It never changes.
It never changes, and that just drives me insane. And I know that people aren't active in this community at all. Our gay community is so loose. It's just like it's there's nothing solid. And I would have thought that Orlando, like with theme parks and a lot of gay people, you know, performers and stuff like that, it would be a really tight-knit community, and it's not. Not at all. Like, I know people that come down here, and they're like, wow, there's, like, really not a gay community here. It's just...
Yeah, it's... And I think that's the same in a lot of places. Because the demographic for HIV is changing.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean to... This is going to sound bad when I say it, so...
You always say that.
Brace yourself.
Brace yourself. But we, you know, the younger gay community, and I'm meaning anybody who's about 10, 15 years younger than I am, and I'm going to be 34 in March, so I'm getting old. but we're seeing that they aren't as concerned with HIV. In general, that the community, because they're seeing it as treatable. You know, they can take a med for it. Some even think that there's a cure for it, because they can take a pill every day. And I think we've done, you know, we've made great progress in the treatment, but we've fallen really behind with education and prevention efforts, because I think we've given the wrong impression. And I think that's... And Joshua, I think that's why we see a not so cohesive effort going on.
Yeah,
what do you think?
Oh, I could just take a pill now.
What's that?
Like, a lot of people are just like, oh, well, I could just take a pill now, and I'll be fine.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, I'll take a pill.
And that's not the way to look at it.
Right, and that's a whole topic in itself, because I can go on about with people that I've you know, talked to, and I just want to smack them across the face, and I'm like, are you crazy? You know?
Are you kidding me? It's not just a pill. And they're also talking about taking, what was it, Truvada? I think it's Truvada, as a prophylactic, you know, meaning that a lot of these folks are out there taking Truvada before they go out at night. They get the pill, and then that gives them a, what are you telling me, Rob? 90 seconds?
I'm just telling you what we got left, man.
but they take the pill, Truvada, to prevent HIV transmission so they can have unprotected sex. And I think that's a bad message, too, because it's not just HIV that's out there. I mean, you've got syphilis and gonorrhea. I mean, I can go on and list all the gross, drippy things that can happen. But, you know, HIV being one of the worst, you know, there are other things out there that can cause big problems.
Yeah. All right, I don't want to cut you guys off. We're down to the last 30 seconds. So I want to, first of all, thank Josh for joining us tonight. Josh, I really appreciate it, and I look forward to learning more about you on the site. I appreciate you calling in and sharing a little bit of your story with us. Jeremy, it's great to see you back in
I know,
back in here. I just want to remind everybody you can learn more about me at PozIM.com and more about Jeremy Dunn at PositiveThinking.com with a Z. And we'll see you guys all next Sunday at 9 p.m. for the new next PozIM radio show. Have a good night, guys.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, and you have a good night as well.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.